The first section of Yechezkel, where we find Yechezkel discussing and legislating laws for the Jewish people in a way that mirrors laws that are found in the Torah, is in the end of the 43rd chapter of Yechezkel in the Haftarah for Parshat Tetzaveh. Not surprisingly, the section of Yechezkel was selected to read in synagogue the same week that we read Parshat Tetzaveh, because they both describe very similar practices with only a small number of differences between them. Many people don't always fully appreciate or realize this because Parshat Tetzaveh usually coincides with Parshat Zachor, and actually, you know, 5 out of every 10 years or so, we don't even read the Haftarah Parshat Tetzaveh because we are actually reading Parshat Zachor instead. However, in a regular year or in a leap year, Parshat Tetzaveh is read regularly, and the Haftarah in Yechezkel is read because of its parallel to Parshat Tetzaveh. The two texts both describe a consecration of a holy space and a series of sacrifices that are offered when consecrating the holy space. And they both begin with the same animal to consecrate the holy space, and that sort of highlights the similarity. They both begin with a par ben bakar lechatat. In Shmot chapter 29, Perek Kavtet Pasuk Aleph, Moshe tells the Jewish people, "V'zeh davar she'taseh lahem lekadesh osam l'chahin li." This is the way you consecrate the priests, the kohanim, and the temple. Lekach, you take par echad ben bakar, a bull, and as we find out later on in Perek Kavtet, this bull becomes a korban chatat. And Yechezkel says similarly, when you are consecrating the temple, this is how you consecrate the temple. Moshe is consecrating the Mishkan. Yechezkel is consecrating the Beit HaMikdash. And he's told, this is Mem Gimel Yutet, you should give to the Kohanim who come from the tribe of Levi, who descend from the righteous priest Tzadok, par ben bakar lechatat. So they both begin in the same way, with a par, a bull, which is a sin offering. There are various interpretations why you begin with a par. Rashi quotes one view that Avraham's chesed, Avraham is associated with chesed, kindness, and in Parshat Vayera, when the angels came, he ran to a par, so it's to remind us of Avraham and Sarah and their chesed to the angels. Others say that the reason why we begin with a par, with a bull, is to perhaps remind us of Cheda Egel, which was a calf, which is a baby bull. Others say that it's to echo the korban of a priest, a Kohen Gadol, who sinned in Vayikra, which is also a bull. But the two texts begin, in any event, very similarly with a par l'chatat. Not only that, but the entire description of the sacrificial order of this chatat are the same. So in Yechezkel Pasukav, you take the blood, you put it on the four corners of the altar. And similarly, Moshe tells the Jewish people in Parshat Tetzaveh, you take from the blood of the par, that you take the blood and you put it on the four corners of the mizbeach. So in both cases, we have a description that the blood of this sin offering, like any sin offering, but it's still mentioned, that the blood of this sin offering has to be placed upon the four corners of the Mizbeah. We do have, we also have a similarity in what happens to the rest of the meat of the animal. Yechezkel continues in Kaf Aleph and says, V'lakachtat par chatat v'sarfu b'mifkar habayit michutz l'mikdash, that the meat of the animal is not eaten, it is instead burnt outside of the temple. And Moshe says the same thing, that the meat of the cow, of the bull, is burnt outside of the camp. Normally, when one has a korban chatat, when one has a sacrifice of a sin offering, the meat is actually offered is actually eaten by the priest, by the kohanim. Part of the process is that you take the animal and you take the meat of the animal and it gets eaten by the kohanim, and that's part of the process of affecting the chatat. In this case, though, both of these cases, the bull is burnt outside of the altar, and there seems to be a special kind of korban, a korban miluim, a korban of consecration, where even though it's a korban chatat and the meat would normally be eaten, in this case, it's a special rule that when you offer a bull for the consecration, you don't end up eating. Eating the meat. Now, the Levim also in Bamidbar Perekhet also bring a bull for consecration and has similar laws associated with it. However, in this place, we find our first major difference between the two texts, namely that the blood of Yechezkel sin offering is also placed al arba pinot ha'azara, on the four corners of the azara, which seems to be an additional placement of blood. Now, throughout this chapter of Yechezkel, the word azara often refers to the altar, so it's possible that the difference is not as dramatic if the blood is placed only elsewhere on the Mizbeach and not in a different place, but there seems to be one additional placement of blood in that case. The most major difference, though, comes when we describe the second day of the consecration process. So regarding the consecration that Moshe Rabbeinu describes, Moshe says, Ufar chatat, and a sin offering, this is in 29:37, Taseh layom, you should do each day for a seven-day period, ala kippurim, in order to have kapara, in order to have atonement, v'chiteta tamizbeach, and thereby purify the altar, u'mashachta oto l'kadosho, and anoint it and make it holy. And repeats, Shivat Yamin. For 7 days, the same parchatat is offered. Here, Yechezkel has a difference. Here, Yechezkel says in Kafet, Uvayom Hashini, by the time you come to the second day, you are offering Si'ir Izim Tamim Lachatat, a goat as a sin offering, in the other day. Now, Rashi says, Zeh lo haya b'mishkan, this was not parallel to what happened in the Mishkan, that here the sin offering is changed into a goat. To find a sin offering of a goat is not a very surprising thing. We know that on every holiday, on every Rosh Chodesh, a sin offering, which is a goat, is brought in the Beit HaMikdash. But here we start to see a difference between Moshe's consecration and what Yechezkel is doing. Moshe also brings an olah, a burnt offering, an offering that is burnt in its entirety in his consecration. Moshe offers an ayel, a ram. In Yechezkel's case, in Kaf Gimel, Mechalosecha Mechate, after you've concluded the sin offerings, Takriv, you bring a burnt offering. However, though there is an Ayo Minatzon, though there is a ram, there's a second animal for this burnt offering, and that is a Par Ben Bakar Tamim, and that is a second bull, which is not offered as a korban chatat. So you're starting to see various differences in these cases. The conclusion, Shivas Yamim Taseh Seir Chatat Layom, Yechezkel, like Moshe, had a seven-day consecration period, but him with a goat and not with the bull. Ufar Ben Bakar V'ayom Minatzon Tumim Yasu, and then the other animals are offered probably for a burnt offering. Again, the 7 day in both places. Question is, what does a student of the Tanakh make of the differences between the texts? Should the student of the Tanakh say that Yechezkel is somehow defying or going against Moshe Rabbeinu's recipe. Moshe says you do 7 days of consecration with a sin offering, and Yechezkel also does 7 days consecration with a sin offering. But Moshe said use a bull, and Yechezkel used, instead of a bull, he used a goat. So by what logic, by what din, by what right is Yechezkel able to do that? Now this question and a number of similar questions are posed by the Gemara in Menachot. The Gemara Menachot on Daf Mem Hayomid Aleph asks exactly this question: how do we resolve the distinction between the Parsha of Tetzaveh and Moshe's case, in contrast with the Haftorah of Tetzaveh and what Yechezkel advises? Now here the Gemara offers two views. The first view, Amar Rabbi Yochanan explains, Parsha Zo, if you want to understand what Yechezkel has in mind in these various cases, Eliyahu Atid Lidorsha. If you want to understand what this all means, we can't explain it to you, and we need Eliyahu Anavi to come and explain it to us. Rabbi Yochanan's orientation to this difficulty is essentially to say that you are correct, that essentially, whatever Yechezkel is predicting, it really should follow the rules of the Torah. And any differences that you see between what Yechezkel says and what Moshe says is something that we cannot explain. And therefore, we're going to need Eliyahu Hanavi to explain it to us. Now, in his comments, Rabbi Yochanan is not saying this explicitly, but he's also wading into a major debate regarding how you understand the second half of Yechezkel. The debate about how you understand the second half of Yechezkel, about whether he's predicting the second Beit HaMikdash or the final Messianic era, comes throughout that section of Yechezkel, is the dry bones describing the building of the return from exile in the second temple or the resurrection of the dead in the time of the third temple. When Yechezkel describes the two sticks coming together, is he describing what will happen in the final Messianic era or in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash? Rabbi Yochanan, by saying that Eliyahu HaNavi will need to explain Yechezkel to us, is essentially signaling that in his view, Yechezkel's legal section is actually describing the Messianic era, what we would call the third Beit HaMikdash, and therefore we can't understand why the laws don't conform with the laws found in Chumash, but don't worry, it's not relevant to our time period anyway, and therefore one day Mashiach will come and he will explain to us what this all means. In contrast, the Gemara has a second view, the view of Ravashi. Ravashi Amar, Ravashi says, Miluim ekrivu me'ezra kederach shekrivuhu b'mei Moshe. Yechezkel is essentially describing the consecration of the second temple. And just like Moshe did a consecration of the first temple, Yechezkel describes a consecration of the second temple. And reading between the lines, I think we have to add that the nature of the consecration sacrifices is something that was not set in stone in the legislated laws of the Chumash. There are some laws in the Chumash which make it very clear what you're supposed to do in a particular environment. The Chumash makes it very clear what sacrifices you're supposed to offer on the holiday of Pesach. But the Torah shows us that when you consecrate a new holy space, you should offer sacrifices, but doesn't give us a recipe what are the exact sacrifices. And therefore, Yechezkel is describing the consecration that Ezra would perform when he returned and consecrated the second temple. And he's following Moshe's model of doing a consecration. But the Torah never legislated that a specific recipe of sacrifices was necessary during consecrations. And every generation could, upon the guidance of the prophets of the era, determine the correct consecration offerings. The Talmud continues that Tamina Mihachi, this debate was even a debate among the Tanaim. Rabbi Yehuda is the view of Rabbi Yochanan that it's talking about a Messianic era, which Eliyahu HaNavi will explain. And Rabbi Yossi, the view of Ravashi, that Ezra was the one who offered a consecration in his time period. The idea that consecration sacrifices can change and that consecration sacrifices are not set in stone in the Torah and are not things that, all generations, whenever they consecrate, it has to be exactly the same, is a reasonable assumption that Rav Ashi and Rav Yossi are making in the Gemara. Even within the Torah itself, there's many different sets of consecration sacrifices when we have consecrations. We've focused on the 7-day consecration that is the focus of Tetzaveh and Tzav. But the truth is that Parshat Shemini describes an 8th day of consecration, which Yechezkel doesn't have an 8th day at all, and that has a whole other host of sacrifices. I alluded to the fact that the Levium are consecrated in Sefer Bamidbar, and they also have a different set of sacrifices when they are consecrated. And throughout the Book of Kings, Melachim, and Divrei Hayamim, you have a number of kings who reconsecrate the temple, who purify it in some way, or after it wasn't in service, they return it to service, and they also have a different set of sacrifices. So the idea that the sacrifices change is not an assertion which is difficult to study. The Rambam's addressing of this particular problem is interesting. The Rambam, in the laws of Maaseh HaKorbanot, in the laws of how sacrifices are offered in the second chapter, addresses the legal portions of Yechezkel explicitly and says that Kol Shirei HaNesachim HaAmurim b'Sefer Yechezkel u'Minyan Otan HaKorbanot v'Sidrei HaAvodot HaKtuvot Sham, all of the sacrifices of Yechezkel, whether we are describing wine offerings or whether we are describing the particular sacrifices offered or the way that they were offered, kulam miluim hem. All of them are special sacrifices to consecrate the temple. Ve'ena noagim ledorot, and don't think that these should be related to a set of Jewish legal principles that apply in all periods. They do not. Elanavitziva, this is a legislated new rule for a particular time legislated by the prophet. And so there's no problem between the law that Moshe commands and what Yechezkel commands. Moshe commanded some laws for all of time and also laws for the consecration of his era. Yechezkel accepts all of the laws of Moshe that endure for all time and also adds an additional set of sacrifices for the consecration of the temple. The Rambam at first sides with, it appears, Rabbi Yochanan, that these sacrifices will be offered in Chanukat HaMizbeach, when the temple is consecrated, bimei HaMelech HaMashiach, in the Messianic era, kishiyivne Bayit Shlishi, when the third temple is built. The Rambam continues in Halacha Tet Vav, u'kshem shikruvu HaNesiim b'Chanukat HaMizbeach dorim she'en kamosam ledorot, and just like we find by other consecrations, he's referencing the one in Parshat Naso, which we read on Hanukkah, of the princes of the tribes. They offered things she'en kamotam ledorot, things that we've never seen at any other point in time. For example, they offered a private incense, which you never offer private incense, and all sorts of unusual korbanot in addition. V'yikrivu b'Shabbos, the Rambam takes the view, which was debated among the Rishonim, that the Nisiyim, the princes, offer their sacrifices on 12 consecutive days, even on Shabbat. Normally, a Korban Shlamim is not offered on Shabbat. And also, the consecration of Yechezkel will be different in that way, that it will also involve a sacrifice on Shabbat. And the Rambam concludes by saying, and not only were there consecrations in Moses' time and in the time of the Third Temple, Ezra sacrifices also are a type of miluim. The Rambam here is referring to Ezra, chapter 8, pasuk 35, in which they bring 12 parim, 12 cows, and 96 rams, and 77 sheep, and 12 goats. That also is a miluim. Dvarim hanoagin ledorot, hein divrei Torah. Any part of the Torah which applies for all generations has the status of Torah. K'misha tiku mipi Moshe Rabbeinu. And since it was legislated from the mouth of Moshe, ein lo sif alehem v'lo legroa, we know that you're not allowed to add or subtract to the Torah. The Rambam is very concerned with the implications of saying that Yechezkel is changing a mitzvah, and therefore the Rambam says, no, there's 613 mitzvos, and they don't change. And then at various times in Jewish history, there were consecration offerings, which are not mitzvos. They're each ad hoc sui generis for the era, and the prophet of that era commands what the sacrifices should be. It's not entirely clear how the Rambam read the Gemara. When you read the Gemara, you get the impression that there is a debate between those that say that Yechezkel predicts the third Messianic era and those that say that Yechezkel is actually speaking about the second Messianic era, the second Temple era. The Rambam seems to be saying, really, they're both right. The Rambam says that the view of Ula, that the view of Ravashi, that they offered Korbanot in the time of the Second Temple is true, because we have a pasuk in Ezra that says very clearly that they offered consecration offerings at that time. But the Rambam says, even though I admit that there were consecration offerings at the time, and that does help my broader argument that consecration offerings can change based on the era, I still, the Rambam seems to be saying, don't believe that that's a sufficient explanation of Yechezkel. And the Rambam says, I think Rabbi Yochanan is the one that is best explaining Yechezkel, that essentially when the Messianic era comes, then the Mashiach will explain it. But the Rambam is not exactly Rabbi Yochanan either. Rabbi Yochanan seemed to say that there was like a problem with this text, that Eliyahu HaNavi would need to explain it to us. Now, the Rambam is borrowing from Rabbi Yochanan the fact that it's the Messianic era, but not the fact that it's a problem, because the Rambam says there's no problem here. These are consecration offerings which can change based on the era. So essentially, the Rambam accepts from Ravashi that these are consecration sacrifices, and from Rabbi Yochanan that Yechezkel speaks to the Messianic era, almost combining between the two views. Be that as it may, when all the dust settles, I think that the challenge and the tension that's found in the Haftorah of Tetzaveh and the Parsha of Tetzaveh is a minor one, because since consecrations are bounded by their particular time and not applicable for all generations, the fact that the consecrations look slightly different is not a big deal. And actually the fact that they have a lot of similarities is very reassuring that Yechezkel and Moshe really have a common vision. This particular difficulty is not so difficult, but there are other instances later in Yechezkel where the distinctions between the laws of Yechezkel and the laws of the Torah are more dramatic, and those issues will require further inspection as well.